Welcome to today's edition of the Rush Limbaugh Show podcast. Welcome to today's edition of the Rush 24/7 podcast.
Hey, gang, did you see this? In honor of the 100th anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party, that country is now rewriting its history to make the party look better. And in a related story, last year, CNN celebrated 40 years on the air. I don't know if they're related. I don't know what it is with people rewriting history. They all have anniversaries the last couple of years. Hi, everybody. Jason Lewis here. It's another edition of Excellence in Broadcasting, another excursion into broadcast excellence with me as your guide, your host, the talk show host formerly known as Congressman Jason Lewis. And L. Rushbo will be with us the whole 3 hours as we get his wit and wisdom from years gone by, but yet applicable to today. You know, you've seen these summits time and time again, and the press loves to make a huge deal about them. It doesn't matter whether it's Reagan and Gorbachev or anybody else. So now Biden is meeting with Putin. The only difference here is he doesn't know it. But other than that, I think it, no big news. Nothing was going to happen, except that Biden dug himself in a hole. He calls his foreign adversary a killer and then he's asked the question, well, do you trust him? And he goes, oh, sure. Nods his head. Yeah, I trust him. You trust all killers? He's really out of his league. He doesn't know what he's doing, but, you knew that. Nevertheless, one interesting development did occur. The press, who thinks they have a right to cover anything they want, including sticking a camera in your face, trespassing on your property, because the First Amendment means they have a right to know, right? No, it doesn't. First Amendment simply means they have a right to try to find out. They don't have a right to unveil state secrets and leak and spy on domestic political opponents. No, the press doesn't have a right to do any of that stuff. Their rights are circumscribed by your rights. So they gather at this Putin-Biden summit, and they're demanding that they film more, they cover more. They don't want to leave the room. And apparently, they were manhandled by Russian security agents, tugging at their coats, pushing them out of the way. You know, they're not used to this. And now think about Jim Acosta. Okay, I mentioned reporters and Acosta in one sentence. That obviously is a conflict of interest. Not a conflict, it's an oxymoron. But remember when he wouldn't leave the East Room, President Trump was holding a press conference, and Trump says, look, I'm not going on with this. If you don't shut up and sit down, other people want to ask questions. Your intransigence is impeding the right of other people to ask questions. But Acosta wouldn't do it. He's from CNN. He has a job to do, just like the Chinese Communist Party has a job to do, rewrite history. And in fact, now the Ruskies aren't putting up with any of that. And they said, guys, get the hell out of here. Biden and Putin are going to talk. You've had your photo op. You've had your time to ask questions. Leave. Oh, my gosh. You would have thought it was the end of the world. It was really something to see, I got to say. By the way, speaking of the media and leaks, you heard about this. Remember, some of us tried to warn you. And I want to get, before I get into that, I do want to get Russia's take, by the way, on Putin and what Putin's real aims were. See, here's the deal. Putin is laughing all the way back to Moscow dealing with Biden. He knows that Biden's weak and he's just going to get what he wants. Trump was not. Contrary to all of the media spin, Trump was actually tough on foreign adversaries. Extremely tough on Russia. You'd never know it by watching CNN, but nevertheless, that was the truth. No one actually put more sanctions on the former Soviet Union. And by the way, it is the former Soviet Union. It is Russia now, not the former communist behemoth. But Putin didn't want Trump in there anymore. So maybe by saying, oh, Trump's my friend, he could have expedited Trump's exit, perhaps. Here's what Rush had to say about this a couple of years ago.
This is Larry in Pine River, Wisconsin.
Hi.
Hey.
I have a question for you.
What is it?
I just heard on the news that Putin came out in defense of Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump doesn't need Putin.
Would you actually characterize it as Putin came out in defense of Trump? What did Putin say?
Well, according to the news, he was defending the fact that this impeachment was, you know, not a good thing.
Right. He didn't defend Trump. He went out and attacked Congress. I laughed my ass off, Larry. I laughed my ass off when Putin, he's goosing them. He's driving them crazy. He's keeping them believing that Trump and Putin are buddies and are sabotaging the Democrats. I think it was hilarious. This is on a par of Trump asking Putin to find Hillary's emails. Here's Putin ripping the U.S. Congress for not having the slightest idea what they're doing, making a big mistake. He can't believe how stupid they are. This is fantastic. He's goosing them, Larry.
Was the fact that he's doing this simply because he wants to set up Donald Trump in the media and on the left to give them a reason to say, see, I told you, he's out there doing it.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. What Putin wants to do is exactly what he's doing, thanks to the Democrats falling for it all. The Democrats want you to believe that Putin wanted Trump to win. And so Trump and Putin are buddies, and they colluded, and they found a way to make it happen. Well, that's not what... Putin can't control who wins. All he wants is the United States in a state of disarray. He wants the United States focusing on internal battles, paying less attention to him. In truth, Donald Trump may be the worst thing that ever happened to Vladimir Putin. Trump is by no means... a Russian ally. So there could be an element of this. Putin trying to keep the Democrats going after Trump alive by claiming they're doing it the wrong way, claiming they're making a mistake. But if that's true, then all Putin is doing is simply trying to further their belief that Russia and Trump are buddies and are colluding. I'm just saying that they are so absent and distant from reality here. That Putin coming out and chastising them for doing it the wrong way, it could be that Putin wants to further the idea that he's on Trump's side, which could then keep the Democrats further engaged and enraged in their effort to get Trump.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, Putin really doesn't care about a lot of this geopolitics, except the stuff that affects him in Ukraine. They have shrunk. They've been hollowed out. They're going back to quote-unquote Mother Russia. This is not the former Soviet Union. So Putin, every time he's pressed on something, and I'm not saying he's a great liberal Democrat. What I'm saying is that every time he's pressed on something, he just throws it right back into Biden's face, right back into the media's face. And so, yeah, you got a problem? Well, what about your January 6th episode? You think you got a problem with me? How come the Capitol Police aren't releasing this or that? How come you haven't gotten to the bottom of this investigation or that investigation? So Biden calling him a killer was absolutely counterproductive, and Putin knows it, and he will hold his own as we see the details from this meeting come out. But here is the thing I was going to get to before Russia's take, and that is this. On the day when Biden's meeting with Putin, or just right before yesterday, we now know that China may have committed an act of war if indeed the evidence continues to mount that this was an engineered virus coming out of Wuhan. But don't take my word for it. Just take John Stewart's. But if that proves to be as true as I think it will be, in years gone by, that would have been considered an act of war. You're engineering a virus. You either through incompetence or deliberately let it go. Either way, nobody would be talking about more trade with China in their right mind. They'd be talking about going after China. And then you've got the meeting with Putin, who is, by Biden's own description, a killer. But what is the number one threat to domestic security, according to Attorney General Merrick Garland, who's turning out to be an absolute Biden 2.0? He's a puppet. He's a prop for the squad. The top domestic threat in America, white supremacist groups. Oh, yeah, I was taking a walk the other day, and a band of them drove right by. And just seriously, what is this guy talking about? If you look at the Bureau of Justice Statistics, from Garland's own Department of Justice, the BJS statistics, there is zero evidence of an epidemic or the top domestic threat of white on Hispanic, white on female, white on gay, white on black crime. In fact, the data proportionately is lopsided in the other direction. But the point is, why are they doing this when China may have committed an act of war, when Putin's a killer by Biden's own admission? And you're talking about that. This is in the wake of I think it was a Georgia man, but the shooting occurred in Georgia and Alabama in the Southeast. You had this fellow who decided to target white people. Now, why did he decide to target white people? I think he shot five people. Shot one guy in the back, came up to him, didn't know him. He's white. I'm going to shoot you in the back. The media just absolutely spiked the story because he said in so many words, well, I was told white people are the devil incarnate. They're the top domestic threat. We got to go after them. Now, this sort of sowing of division and deliberately targeting people on the basis of skin color is about as racist as you could possibly imagine. And there you have the attorney general and his allies in the press encouraging it. Now, I want to be clear about that. By lying about this, they are encouraging interracial crime. And same thing happened during the Jim Crow in reverse, when you had the government looking the other way with white on black crime. Are we going to the other direction now? Merrick Garland is turning out to be every bit as bad as I thought he would be. I'm Jason Lewis, in for the guest host today. We're doing the Rush Limbaugh program and more of El Rushbo when we come back on EIB. You know, this whole Merrick Garland thing has a white supremacy being the top domestic threat reminds me of a conundrum that I've been thinking about for quite some time, and really goes back to when I was in Congress and I had an opportunity to go down to the Capitol Visitor Center, the Intelligence Committee, and read all of the intelligence data on Russia. Obviously, I can't tell you what was there, but I can tell you this. I read most of it in the media beforehand. The leaks were everywhere. You had Swalwell and Adam Schiff working hand in hand with the media. We knew that. But they were also working hand in hand with our own government out to unseat a duly elected president. They were not only spying on Trump and spying on a whole host of Trump aides that we now know. They were conjuring up false Russian collusion. They were falsifying data or documents like the Russian dossier, the Steele dossier, to a FISA court, which to this day has shamefully done nothing about it. That's why I voted against reauthorization of FISA, including 702. But the point is, we shouldn't be engaged in spying on fellow Americans, period. We shouldn't just be doing that, period. It's a matter. Should not be a secret court allowing that. Especially with a substandard level of probable cause. No public court could ever get away with that. But what happens when you've got your own government leaking and working with one political party? Well, you say, Jason, you're just being a partisan. You're not thinking about all of the threat that Trump proposed. He was so authoritarian. Why we had to do something. Well, really? Well, let me tell you what's happened now. ProPublica has apparently worked with someone, we don't know who, but somehow they got private tax return info, not on just Jeff Bezos or Warren Buffett. I don't give a damn about those guys. I'd like to see their taxes go up. But fact is, what their story was, they're not paying enough of their wealth, was totally a non-story. We don't tax people's wealth accumulation. We tax their income. Because when you're accumulating wealth, your lifestyle hasn't gone up. Your lifestyle doesn't go up until you sell the stock. Then you've got the money to buy things. That's what we tax. That's the way it should be. So we encourage people to invest and accumulate wealth. Far be it for me to defend those two liberal Democrats, but I got to do what I must, right? The point is, the question is, how did ProPublica get thousands of returns? It's not just Buffett and Bezos. By every account, they have thousands of returns. Was someone at the IRS leaking it to them? Somebody at the IRS actually doing the left wing's dirty work? Well, let me remind you, friends, and I don't think anybody's mentioned this. ProPublica was absolutely involved back in December of 2012 when the liberal media outlet received a conservative 501c4's returns or application for tax-exempt status from the IRS. They were getting data from the IRS in the Obama IRS scandal. So you've got ostensibly government actors working with a left-wing media outlet to get what they want, in this case raise taxes, in the other case back in the Obama IRS scandal, which nothing ever came of, to go after conservative organizations. This is what we face with the swamp. The swamp has taken sides. One of the things we were going to do, had I won the U.S. Senate race, had President Trump had his second term, go after civil service reform. You have a permanent bureaucracy. Politicians come and go. Schedule C appointees come and go. Political appointments come and go, but the bureaucracy stays there. We better do something about that before we have a one-party rule in this country. And this one-party rule now is pulling out all the stops for an infrastructure bill. And five Republicans are helping the Democrats get a $1 trillion infrastructure bill passed when the country's bankrupt with a $30 trillion debt. What on earth are they thinking about? The Democrats are going to use reconciliation to try to get this passed, but they've got a little problem with the Byrd rule. The Senate parliamentarian has already said, no. This is for a budget resolution, a one-time deal. She's right. I served on the budget committee. We passed three budget resolutions. They were an all-encompassing macro budget. You can't just blow out spending and call it reconciliation. Here's what Rush had to say about this infrastructure stuff.
The Democrats are measuring the drapes in the Oval Office. They're already plotting how they're going to spend your money. Political reports of Democrats are eyeing aggressive budget and spending plans if they sweep in November. They plan to deploy every tool at their disposal. And Democrats are sick and tired of strict budget caps, the threat of automatic spending cuts. So if they pull off a trifecta, winning the White House, the Senate, and the House, all bets are off. They'll use budget reconciliation to get around a Senate filibuster so they can spend big on infrastructure, clean energy, the Green New Deal, government-paid child care, and other leftist big-ticket items. Senior Democrats are not hiding it. They plan to disperse trillions of dollars on their budget fantasies. Democrat Congressman John Yarmuth, who would head the House Budget Committee, said the possibilities are endless. So we'll get endless spending on the Democrat agenda, plus Joe Biden's promise to raise taxes on businesses and get rid of the Trump tax cuts. Add it all up, and here's what we've got. Businesses fleeing the country again, massive recessions again, low economic growth again, millions of jobs down the drain again, prosperity out the window, the American dream destroyed. This is what Democrats have to offer. It's what they want to offer. It's what they do best. Do not doubt me, folks.
Do not doubt L. Rushbro. He is right, of course. And this infrastructure bill should be going nowhere. The thought that five Republicans, the usual suspects, are trying to work to get this done is a gift to Biden. But the real danger is if they get infrastructure out of the way, what the Biden administration really plans to do is to wrap everything else up, $4, $5, $6 trillion, into a reconciliation bill. That's going to be a total abuse of the 1974 budget law that says budget reconciliation passes a budget. It's got to be germane. It's usually used once, not for endless revisions. And that's what the Senate parliamentarian has already said. So naturally, what did Ilhan Omar say? Fire her. And we'll just cram this down the throats of the American people because we want to end up just like Venezuela, bankrupt. I don't understand. I really don't understand why these Republicans are trying to help Biden get an infrastructure bill. It's a little bit like opposing closing the border because Donald Trump has now said he's going to go to the border to emphasize the contrast between controlling our sovereignty and letting it go straight to hell the way the Biden administration has done. We're going to talk about that coming up next segment, and Russia's got a great point on how illegal immigration is indeed a national emergency. And it is right now a national emergency. We better get a handle on that. So we'll get to the border stuff coming up. More Rush clips. Stick around. I am former Congressman Jason Lewis, your guide today on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. Oh, yes, back remembering America's real anchor man, Rush Limbaugh, on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. Still the fastest 3 hours in radio. Here's the plan here, gang. We've got so much to talk about. Biden versus Putin. We've got Merrick Garland accusing, basically people by skin color of being the top domestic threat. We have ProPublica, the left-wing organization, getting data from the IRS just like it's 2012. People forget that. This is the same ProPublica that was involved in the Obama IRS scandal when they were targeting conservative 501c4 groups like Crossroads USA and others. And now they're back. This is the same government that leaks to Adam Schiff and Swalwell. And then they're upset because the Trump administration wanted to find out who's leaking to them. We have a permanent class, a permanent bureaucracy embedded, not just in DOJ and the FBI, which is now getting to the point of being borderline corrupt. Remember during the Trump campaign and all of the violence of the campaign, some of that was instigated by left-wing groups, obviously. They do this deliberately. So you've got a situation here where, like Peru or Venezuela, or El Salvador, pick your favorite country, where you've got one-party rule, and when anybody challenges them, they wind up being prosecuted and put in jail. The apparatus of government goes after them. Now, you can describe that as anything you want, but the closest word is tyrannical. The closest word is losing our constitutional republic, losing self-government. And we are right up against it. Take a look at the border. Got a caller here from Wisconsin saying, Jason, there's no comparison between Biden and Carter. By the way, we'll get to calls next break. But there's no comparison to Biden and Carter because Carter was just incompetent. Biden is doing this on purpose. And I actually think that's probably true to a large degree. Biden may not know he's doing it on purpose, just like Merrick Garland may not know. But they are being manipulated by the squad and the left-wing indivisible radicals that have taken over the Democrat Party. They are globalist collectivists who believe in the almighty power that would make Mao blush. I keep going back to the old great John Lennon line in Revolution where he mocked the left-wingers. Yeah, that's right. Mr. Marxist, John Lennon, mocked the revolutionaries when he said, if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't going to make it with anyone anyhow. That's all these people are doing. They're celebrating Maoism. They're defenders of Chinese communism. And if you look at what's going on at the border, the best way they can expedite the overthrow, the revolution, Mao 1947, the best way they can get to there is by having a flood of illegals come in and create a national emergency. And of course, vote for them. Here's how Rush described it back in 2019.
I like the idea of a national address by the president from the Oval Office on this crisis at the southern border involving drugs, illegal immigration, and the all-out assault on the United States of America. I said I like the idea of a national address. I don't know the networks would give him the time. You know, they don't have to, but a national address that's written and promptered could explain what's going on and why. There's going to be an official Democrat response. It'll be a joint response. Chuck and Nancy are going to join together to do a coordinated universal response to President Trump. And it's going to be fascinating to me to see their attitude. Is it going to be arrogant? Is it going to be condescending? Is it going to be insulting of Trump like Gavin Newsom was in his inaugural address as the governor of California? All he did was take out after Trump. We got details of this coming up. There's lots of stuff I want to get to today, including a debate has ensued over whether or not the president can actually invoke emergency powers to build a wall or to shut it down. And the consensus among legal minds that I respect is that it's a no-brainer that there is an act of Congress from 1976 that permits him to do just that. And it's a pretty damn broad power. It's the Executive Emergencies Act, 1976. The Congress did in 1976. And it's really strange when you consider that it's post-Watergate, and the Democrats, I'm sure, thought that there was never going to be another Republican president again. And Nixon had destroyed, in their minds, the Republican Party, and so they're passing laws that are expanding the powers of the executive branch like mad because they think they're going to be occupying it in perpetuity. And now it's one of these things that's come back to bite them. So this is a debate that's raging, and it doesn't seem to me to be much of a question legally. And precisely because of that, the media and the Democrats are attempting to muddy the waters here and make it look like the law doesn't exist and that Trump is a power-mad, dictatorial, incompetent buffoon who's putting the nation at great risk. But is what's happening at the southern border an emergency? This is a question that I think is a microcosm of the overall question that we face regarding the country at large. Are we in a crisis? And part of the reason for this crisis is precisely what's happening on the southern border. How about there have been 235,000 arrests of illegal aliens by ICE in the last year alone? That number includes 4,000 arrests for homicide, 30,000 arrests for sex crimes, and over 100,000 arrests for assault. How can anybody look at those numbers and say this isn't a crisis? Then the overall invasion aspect of the sheer numbers of people who are coming who have no desire to assimilate, have no desire to become part of what is and has been a distinct American culture. Rather, they come here and become pawns of a Democrat Party seeking to undermine that very culture. Although there is some surprising polling data, something in the neighborhood of 30% of Hispanic voters approve of the job Trump is doing. So some of the conventional wisdom is wrong about what happens to people who eventually come here. But the objective of the Democrats is very clear, to convert every one of them to a ward of the state, to keep them with meager incomes, to keep them uneducated, to keep them totally dependent. The overall impact of that on the culture, on our morality, on the whole concept of guardrails and right and wrong itself is a crisis, and it's an even larger one if you consider the assaults on the country made by the Democrats and their madcap left. But back to the border, look at the drug situation, just the drug problem that an open border is causing should be enough to be considered a national emergency. Get this, more than 90% of the drugs coming into the country are coming across the southern border. 90% of the illegal drugs. And when the number of overdoses on heroin and meth and crystal meth have caused three times the number of American deaths than the number of Americans killed during the entire war in Vietnam, how can you say we don't have a crisis?
Bingo, and don't forget fentanyl being imported through Mexico in many cases into the United States and through the border. It's just out of control, and that was a couple of years ago. We all know it's much, much worse right now. How often do you rely on your cell phone? For some, it's all day, every day. That kind of cell phone usage can become expensive unless you switch to PureTalk with a flat $30 a month fee for unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data. When Rush discovered PureTalk last year, he detailed it all out for us, and it went like this.
You shop for the best price you can find on insurance, on home mortgages, on vacation travel, maybe even cheeseburgers. I don't know. So why not do the same thing with cellular phone service? Your cell phone number is your own. And who you choose for cellular service is all up to you. One company makes such a compelling offer, it's worth thinking about. It's PureTalk. They offer you unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. And guess what? If you go over on the data, they don't charge you for it. PureTalk. Compare that monthly price, $30 a month, to your current cell phone bill, and you'll see why it makes sense to change. Now, I don't know what your cell phone bill is. But I would wager you that it's $60 or more, maybe 120, maybe 75 or more. This outfit, Pure Talk, is offering you unlimited talk, unlimited text, and 6 gigs of data for $30 a month. Now, Pure Talk knows they're in the same business with the likes of AT&T and Verizon and T-Mobile. In fact, get this, they use the same cell towers of one of the big companies that covers 99% of the country. They offer superior service. 100% of the Pure Talk customer support team is right here in America. So you make one phone call to them today, you can start to save money by switching to Pure Talk. All you do is get your cell phone and dial #250. Next, you say Pure Talk. It's that simple. You'll save 50% off your first month. That's #250. And then say Pure Talk. One of the Pure Talk customer service people will be right there on the phone to help you. And by the way, it's legit. $30 a month, unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data.
You know, I have to admit it. I don't like to admit it, but I have to admit it. I didn't know who Roger Waters was. Now, I've never been a huge Pink Floyd fan, but I'm becoming one. Will you hear what he had to say about Facebook and big tech coming up next hour on the Rush Limbaugh program? I am Jason Lewis, the talk show host formerly known as Representative Lewis from the great state of Minnesota, otherwise known today as Occupied Territory. Let's squeeze in a call at 1-800-282-2882 before we get to Russia's take on these rising oil prices. We talked a lot about that yesterday. I'll revisit it in a second. But first, Wautoma, Wisconsin. Edward, you're on the Rush Limbaugh Show with me, Jason Lewis.
Good morning, Jason. Say, hopefully I have enough time. I'd like to go into the weeds a little bit with you because you're such a smart guy. It has to do with the budget and budget reconciliation and all the games that the Democrats are playing. I think that the Republicans now and in the future have an opportunity in that they've always been so timid about government shutdowns. And, you know, that it makes them look bad. My point is, I think that we could start playing hardball with the Democrats and with such, I won't list all the examples, but one in particular, like stop defunding or defund Planned Parenthood. Let them shut the government down because do you really think the average American is going to care anymore that the government shuts down after what we've gone through in the last
The average American
months?
Doesn't care about infrastructure, especially when it's for green initiatives. You're 100% correct. There's a debt ceiling vote coming up this summer. The Republicans should look back at the Budget Control Act of 2011 and say, unless you give us a plan to cut the deficit and the debt, we are not going to raise the debt ceiling. That's how you got sequestration, which I voted to keep when I was in Congress. The reconciliation debate is all about getting around the filibuster. Now, there's a 50-50 split. You got to have 60 votes to invoke cloture, to end debate. So the Democrats don't have that for this radicalism. So they figure, well, we'll just put everything in budget reconciliation, which is a mechanism in the 1974 Budget and Empowerment Act to get a budget passed. But it's not for minimum wage. It's not for infrastructure. It's for a budget and a budget resolution. I know I served on the budget committee and we passed 3 budget resolutions when I was in Congress. So the idea that they could use reconciliation to wrap everything in there and have a 51-49 vote is fantasy because the Senate parliamentarian said you can't do it. Now, here's where your point is really good, and that is, what in the hell are these Republicans doing to try to make that easier? The 5 Republicans, you know, the Romneys, the Sasses, the usual never-Trumpers, the Portmans, you name it, they're helping Biden get an infrastructure bill passed, and that way, passing a budget resolution later with all the goodies and the Christmas tree ornaments will be easier for the Democrats. Why would they do that?
Oh, you are so correct. You are so correct.
It makes no sense, but it just shows you that in order to defeat socialists, you can't have defectors. And the Republican Party has about 20, 30, 40% defection right now. And that's got to stop, or we got to show them the door and say, why don't you join the party you've been helping? Ed, thanks so much. Appreciate the call. Now, Rush talked a little bit about oil prices, and we hit this hard yesterday. And when it comes to this green energy nonsense, understand this. The Democrats are pushing electric vehicles on America. Now, you can't afford them, but if you're wealthy and you're a trust fund brat out in San Francisco, you can afford them. But you can't. But here, understand this. The Highway Trust Fund, I was on transportation and infrastructure as well, is broke. They don't have enough user fee revenue, so they got to steal from general revenues to do something that should be a user pay system. Guess who's getting a free ride on this? Electric vehicles. They pay no gasoline tax, the primary funder. They get a $7,500 subsidy when folks buy them. And that's what they want to expand? The reason I bring this up is every time oil prices spike because we're basically banning energy production, they say, well, just drive an electric vehicle. You'll have no roads then, folks. But here's why oil prices didn't skyrocket as of a couple of years ago when Rush talked about it.
The free flow of oil at market prices is the number one factor in a stable economy in this country and most of the Western democracies. You might not like hearing that, but it is. It's why when Saddam Hussein went into Kuwait, threatened to shut down the oil, take it all over, we didn't waste any time. George H.W. Bush dispatched troops. We could not allow that to happen. The free flow of oil. I don't care what the climate change ninnies say. I don't care what the anti-fossil fuel crowd says. The world functions on the free flow of oil at market prices. Any interruption is a potential disaster. Any oversupply depresses prices. It's a delicate balance. There's tons of it. The challenge with the supply of oil is meeting the demand without creating a whole bunch of surplus. It's a logistics problem. It's a pleasant one to have. So with the United States production rising, the Saudi production, OPEC production is going to have to be cut because the world supply is what it is. The world demand is what it is. If the U.S., because of the dominant position we have, sets the price, the Saudis are going to have to accommodate. So they might have been looking forward to cutting back production anyway. If they didn't, prices would collapse because there would be way more supply than the world needed.
Okay, running a little late. Let's take a pause, come back, wrap up hour one. Tons more coming up on EIB. Okay, as promised, wait till you hear what Pink Floyd's Roger Waters said about Mark Zuckerberg and the Facebook, big tech, you name it, monopolies that are censoring Americans with whom they disagree. This is absolutely choice. That's coming up next hour. Also, your calls as we continue on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. Stick around. Now, I have to say, gang, it's not official. I can't verify this with 100% certainty, but word has it that when Biden and Putin met, the first words Joe Biden uttered were, "Hey, killer." And that just seems odd, but I don't know. He already called him that, so why not? Hey, killer, how you doing? Come on, man. Welcome back. Hour two underway. I've got good news and bad news. The good news is the Biden-Putin summit didn't do any damage. The bad news is Joe Biden plans to come back. I tell you, this is much ado about nothing. These things never. I mean, I guess if you're talking about, Khrushchev and Kennedy at Vienna, that had a huge impact on the future. Reagan and Gorbachev, I suppose, at Reykjavik or elsewhere. But these sorts of things usually don't produce much, and the media love them. But that's really about it. But we'll keep you up to date on all of that. Hey, remember when Lois Lerner, who ran the tax-exempt department for the IRS during the Obama years, was targeting conservative organizations? So they had weaponized the IRS, sort of the way the FBI had been weaponized against Trump and was illegally wiretapping political opponents, even though attorney John Durham is nowhere to be found anymore. I don't know. I mentioned that yesterday. Where the hell is this guy? The U.S. attorney that's supposed to be investigating and bringing charges on this. Anyway, December 14th, 2012, a liberal media outlet received Crossroads GPS, I think that's Rove's outfit, their application for tax-exempt status. Now, why did a liberal media outlet receive this? Well, the whole scandal was the IRS was targeting conservative organizations. Guess who that liberal media outlet was? ProPublica. Fast forward 2021, ProPublica receives thousands of IRS returns, publishing the wealthier ones, but they still have thousands more, as apparently they've got a mole inside the IRS. The same outfit. I'm telling you, if we don't do something about the permanent bureaucracy and the constant leaks and, more importantly, the takings of sides in all of this, at the behest of liberalism, we're not going to be living in a free country much longer. And one of the first hallmarks of freedom is the free press. Well, unfortunately, we've never seen a move towards censorship the way we have recently. And it's not just big tech, and I want to get to that in a moment. But it's also when it comes to book publishing. This is actually a pretty big deal, and nobody's talking about it. But two veteran book publishing executives have now decided to launch their own conservative publishing house called All Seasons Press. Now, here's the deal on this. If the liberal left, the media say, oh, gosh, critical race theory and censorship is just a figment of talk radio's imagination, why is the former president and publisher of Simon & Schuster's Gallery Books and a former executive from Hatchet Book Group, why are they forming another publishing outfit to get conservative thoughts published if there isn't a problem with censorship? This is how democracies die. Social media platforms, universities, the media, publishers, you name it. There is a move towards censoring ideas we don't like, and it becomes very, very dangerous, and it becomes ever more dangerous when you have monopolies doing it. That's why in Ohio, there's a lawsuit demanding that Google be classified as a public utility and become regulated. Let me tell you something. The same people that were bemoaning ExxonMobil a few years ago for their market share are strangely silent over Google's 90, 93, 95, 96% search engine market share, whatever it might be, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all the rest of these left-wing trolls have a control over what we say and do. And they are common carriers. And they ought to be regulated. At the very least, Section 230 ought to be repealed. The Republicans could have done that in the NDAA bill, but they chickened out during the last president's lame duck session. And don't think this is a figment of the conservatives' imagination. Get this from Pink Floyd's Roger Waters. Now, apparently last week in New York City, during a Stand with Julian Assange event, calling for the release of Julian Assange from prison, Pink Floyd co-founder Roger Waters described how he was asked, well, basically how he told Mark Zuckerberg to go take a flying leap. Here's how it went.
It's a request for the rights to use my song, Another Brick in the Wall 2, in the making of a film to promote Instagram. So it's a missive from Mark Zuckerberg to me, with an offer of a huge, huge amount of money. And the answer is, f*** you. No f*** way. And I only mention that because this is an insidious, it's the insidious movement of them to take over absolutely everything, you know. So I will not be a party to this bullshit, Zuckerberg. They want to use it to make Facebook and Instagram even bigger and more powerful than it already is, so that it can continue to censor all of us in this room.
Okay, Raj, don't sugarcoat it. Give it to us straight. I mean, that's hilarious. And I think there is an undercurrent. You're starting to see it from a few comedians, Jon Stewart and Kevin Hart and others. And now Roger Waters, who clearly believes in maybe even a purest form of freedom. I mean, all the WikiLeaks data land on Julian Assange's desk. He wants to publish it. Now they put him in jail. So Waters says, no, you can't do that. So the guy's a purist when it comes to liberty. And he sees a threat with big tech because what they're trying to do. And what they are trying to do is monopolize the free flow of ideas on behalf of state-run media. They are getting favors from the government for acting as their enforcer. Every publisher out there can be sued for what they publish. Not what they say, what they publish. So if they publish my op-ed and I slander somebody, not only can I be sued, but the publisher, the newspaper can be sued. Except if you're Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you name it. They got an exemption in the Telecommunications Act of 1996 called Section 230, which gave them immunity because they were a neutral platform taking on all comers, printing everything that came their way except their liars. They now censor. They're censoring anybody that doesn't think the right way. For instance, people that say, oh, I don't know, the coronavirus escaped from a lab. That was censored. Now, they happen to be wrong, but they don't care. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts, absolutely. This is Lord Acton in progress. So they're getting this favor from the government. The Republicans in the National Defense Authorization Act had an opportunity to repeal 230, and they chickened out because they cared more about plussing up the DOD, which is turning into a politically correct version of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and spending more money for defense contractors than they did in rectifying free speech. This is the Liz Cheney, Ben Sasse wing of the Republican Party. All they care about is tripling the Pentagon. Everything else can go to hell in a handbasket. They don't care about debt. I can tell you a famous member of Congress who told me when I was in the halls of Congress, I don't care about the debt as long as I can get my increases for the Pentagon. And what's the Pentagon doing now? The national security apparatus is not looking out for national security. They're looking after you. Rush obviously had this right when he talked about Facebook's problem not long ago.
Facebook is got a problem. And, you know, any company that offers its services free, it means only one thing. It means you are the customer. Or you're the product, actually. And you're the one being bought and sold. And that's exactly how Facebook is structured. When it comes to Facebook, we've had the sound bites here where Obama campaign people brag about sucking up, hoovering up all of the Facebook data for Obama's reelection campaign in 2012. And we've had the New York Times stories talking about the geniuses in the Obama campaign that maximized the usage of all this Facebook data. Cambridge Analytica comes along and gets a measly 50 million people worth of data, and all of a sudden it's a crime, whereas Zuckerberg openly, willingly worked with Obama to provide all of the user data for all of Facebook's users to the Obama campaign, and there was no thought of it being criminal. There was no thought of it violating federal election law, campaign finance, none of that. It was pure genius. Did you see that Facebook, with some of their apps, has even found a way to listen to you in your home? I've had people tell me, I don't know if this is true, I've had people tell me, they've been on the phone talking with a friend, and in the conversation they talked about a place they might want to go to vacation. And within hours on their phone, there's an ad for that place. And they were talking on the phone. They were not emailing or texting. And they didn't think anything about it until they heard that Facebook might have been able to listen to people through Facebook apps. No, your phone has a microphone, obviously, and your computer has a microphone. Now, Facebook, the customers are the product. Facebook would sell everything they learned about you to advertisers. Now, in politics, that is a gold mine. There's no question. So here this kid goes to Harvard and creates, as an avocation, Facebook. He's trying to meet girls. The age-old quest of every guy, meet girls. So he creates something called the Facebook. And he's putting it together while he's a student, and it grows and grows. Long before he hit 30, he figured out that the real gold mine he had
was collecting every bit of information on every user he could. He was himself hoovering up information. He wasn't providing anything other than an opportunity for other people to connect with each other. But he was. Did he have this idea on his own, or did one of his early investors, or did one of his friends? But it, to me, it's amazing. I know we have prodigies and special people and people that are advanced way beyond their years. But what Facebook has become, it's a, just take away the politics of it for a moment and the momentary controversies. It's a massively successful, out of this world successful thing, creating an audience of 2 billion. Look at it that way. An audience of 2 billion. There's nobody that's done that. Nobody has that. CNN doesn't even have a million. And if you take away the monopoly they have in the airports, take away the pornographic star interviews, you practically have nothing over there. And they're seasoned experts.
You got that right. I'm Jason Lewis, your guide today on the Rush Limbaugh program. More coming right up. 1-800-282-2882, the contact line here on another excursion into broadcast excellence with America's real anchorman, Rush Limbaugh. Rush lives on, thankfully. He also lives on at Rush 24/7, rushlimbaugh.com. Do not forget to maintain your subscription there. I am Jason Lewis, the talk show host formerly known as Congressman Lewis. Let's try to squeeze in a call or two. Greer, South Carolina. Dan, you're on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network.
Hey, Jason. How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. So I'm 21 years old. I was born and raised a Rush baby. So I have my parents back in Ohio to thank for that. And if there's anything Rush taught me, it's to, you know, think about how current events today will play into my life in the long run, right? Mm-hmm. And how to think critically about that. So I'm calling to talk about how our government really needs to stop this frivolous spending so that the younger generation like myself can afford houses.
Don't you like free stuff?
Doesn't come from, I'm sorry?
Don't you like free stuff?
Yeah, but not when I'm paying for it, right? For other people's free stuff.
Yeah, it really is amazing, isn't it? You can't tax your way out of $6 trillion. And this is the problem for the Biden administration and for liberalism in general. For instance, the top 1% of income earners, these are people closing in on $500,000 a year, right? They make about 20% of the nation's income, but pay 40% of all the taxes. If you were to confiscate all their wealth, you could not balance the budget. And in fact, the top 50% of income earners today in this country, the top 50% pay 97% of all income taxes. So the bottom 50% are paying about 2.8%, almost 3%. So literally, if they're going to exempt all these people from taxes and just tax the rest, it's not enough money to fund what they want to fund when you're looking at a blowout of $30 trillion in national debt, $6, $7 trillion a year. When I was in Congress, the budget was $4 trillion. Now it's $6 trillion. You can't keep this up. So what they do is they say, we will tax, but we won't tell Dan from Greer, South Carolina, that we're taxing him and his girlfriend or whatever. And here's how they do it. They have the Fed write a credit on the Treasury's checkbook by monetizing the debt. So instead of borrowing, which literally there isn't enough money, corporate debt is up. There's not enough people that could lend the government this much money, even foreigners, without raising interest rates. They monetize the debt. They print money. It's fiat money. The Fed basically buys $100 billion worth of government bonds, mortgage bonds, you name it, every month. And when they do this, poof, money's created in thin air. They financed all this spending. Where does the money go, Dan?
Beats me.
Well, it goes to bid up houses, goes to bid up the price of gasoline, goes to bid up grocery, lumber, you name it. We are in the midst of a housing bubble. I think we're in the midst of a stock market bubble and a bond bubble. We are in the midst of prices going up faster than they have core prices in 30 years. You are being priced out of healthcare, of education, and of your first house. That is a tax.
Right. Yeah, so the more we spend, the higher the more expensive it's going to be for myself and the rest of the younger generation to buy houses. And I don't think, you know, people my age really understand that. You know,
they don't. They don't. In fact, this is the great disconnect in the media. The media will report on the Fed monetizing the debt and Federal Reserve policy, but they will not report that it is a direct consequence of spending. Every dollar the government spends right now is an inflation tax because it's funded through monetizing the deficit. So you are smarter than most. You're connecting the two. The government can tax, they can borrow, or they can print money. They're doing the latter, but that's still a tax. It's all a tax.
Right, and I think this is just another way that the left is going to end up ruining the American dream, because everyone, you know, I was born and raised, I want to buy a house, I want to live with my family in that house, and I'm not going to be able to do that, or it's going to be a hell of a lot more expensive to do that in the future because of their actions in Congress.
I would tell you what, I think the left has engineered the greatest assault on young people in my lifetime. $1.6 trillion in student loans for what? For a college degree that doesn't teach you how to operate a cash register. These degrees are worthless in critical race theory and all the other attendant social science degrees they can get. It is a grand ripoff for the benefit of people working at the university, the deans, the professors, the diversity coordinators, you name it. It is and now they want the taxpayer to pay off the bill. But you're still stuck with the student loan for now. Healthcare and the lack of real healthcare reform has priced you out of buying insurance. You can't do it without a subsidy, and even that doesn't keep up. The price of gasoline and the cost of an automobile. Secondhand cars are now skyrocketing in value because nobody can afford the first one, and the chip shortage is driving up the price of used cars. Groceries are going up. Gasoline and housing. The American dream for young people is simply out of reach for anyone under 30 years old in America. This is a direct consequence of a profligate government spending too much money. And nobody admits it except you.
Yeah, and it's just totally devaluing the dollar. And it's just sad to see a country that I grew up with, that I love and stuff, just, you know, say.
Well, how come? Why is it then millennials don't get it?
I'll tell you, a lot of people just don't want to hear it. I'll try to talk to some of my friends about it, and they're like, "Oh yeah, that's just all that political crap." And I was like, this affects your life now.
Next time somebody says that and they're advocating some program, ask them, where are you going to get the money? This is a question every American ought to ask every politician and every liberal hack out there in the news media. Okay, we're going to spend money on infrastructure. $1.2 trillion is the latest compromise. Great, where are you going to get it? Where are you going to get it? They have not a clue. We roll on for more broadcast excellence on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. I am Jason Lewis, guiding you through another edition of the Rush Limbaugh program. You know, we got to get to the COVID lockdowns, which more and more now are seen for what they were, taking a public health challenge and exploiting it for political expediency, which culminated, by the way, in the revising of state election law by officials who had no business doing that, primarily secretaries of state. It was especially acute in Minnesota. No one did anything about it. And it resulted in, this is going to shock you. This is, it doesn't matter where you live in a urban area, but in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minneapolis sits in Hennepin County. St. Paul sits in Ramsey County. Shockingly, the counties are just filled with patriots. I mean, you think Ilhan Omar's district hates America? Au contraire, they're patriots. Why? They had an 83% turnout in the 2020 elections. Ditto for Ramsey County. Record turnouts. Didn't have anything to do with the fact that Secretary of State Steve Simon illegally redid election law, extended deadlines, ended witness signatures so that we could identify people. They looked the other way. All of the officials looked the other way as ballot harvesting was going on. And this all came about, by the way, because we just had to do something in the face of the lockdowns and the coronavirus to allow people to vote without actually proving who they were and getting to the polls like normal Americans would. It used to be you had to jump through a hoop or two to vote because it wasn't only a right, it was also seen as a privilege. Now it's like, you know, have ballot will travel. Well, the other hit from the lockdown was, of course, the economic calamity. And there was a fella, I think it was Andy Pudzer, former CEO of CKE Restaurants, writing in his book, The Capitalist Comeback, I think. No, that was an old book. This was in the Journal, I believe. Regardless, he writes, from March 1 through August 31st, nearly 100,000 businesses listed on Yelp had closed permanently due to the lockdowns. That's 500 a day. The National Restaurant Association, 110,000 restaurants have permanently closed. We devastated this country with a lockdown that was there for political expediency by the power-hungry left and their allies in the media and on big tech. By the way, some companies did very, very well. Amazon, online companies, they did very well. Just so happens they support Democrats. It may happen to be a coincidence. Well, it wasn't just these restaurants and small mom-and-pop businesses. And this is why I sued the governor of Minnesota when I was running for the Senate to reopen. This is why I defied the lockdown and campaigned anyway when I was running for the Senate. Because it was basically had the boot on every small businessman or woman's throat. And it happened all over the country. And malls, shopping malls, took a massive hit because nobody could go there. Back in April of last year, here's how Rush described that.
So Catherine and I were chatting about the daily brief yesterday after the president announced the phased reopening plan for the country. And it has to happen. Folks, there is no delaying this any further. And you see, all over the country now, people are revolting against certain state governors who want to maintain lockdown. It can't go on. This forced shutdown, the forced ruination of the United States economy must end. And I can't tell you, I was longing for that day yesterday. I've tried during the course of every day's busy broadcast, I have tried to convey my concern and fear for you, for all of us, for everybody. And I've been there. I don't know how many of the people who are among our experts setting policy, I don't know how many of them have been broke. I don't know how many of them have been where 22 million Americans are. Without a job, without any income, and unemployment compensation that just will not get it done. I don't know how many. There may be some. I'm sure that the law of averages would dictate some have been there. And I think that way too many people in some positions of authority and power really don't face dire economic circumstances like an increasing number of the American people do. There may be great risk in reopening the country in phases. There may be great risk in sending people back out to start working, even under the guidelines. There are risks that have to be taken. Taking risks, entrepreneurism, fearlessness, it's a hallmark of the American identity and of the American culture. And this shutdown and hunkering down in total fear is not a hallmark of American history or of American culture. I know that some governors are pushing back on Trump's guidelines to reopen the economy. Some governors are not pushing back. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen here, because I saw it. I noticed it yesterday. We needed to start talking about reopening the economy. The most abnormal thing in the world is to have the U.S. economy shut down to the tune of losing. I mean, we took a $22 trillion economy, and inside of 4 weeks, we put 22 million people out of work. You talk about abnormal, and it was running the risk the longer it went on, shutting down the economy, having people stay at home, have cities be ghost towns.
You know, never before, to Rush's point, had any government done this. Yes, and that includes the Spanish flu of 1917, 1918. You had tens of thousands of people still going to football games during the Spanish flu epidemic. Eisenhower, as I mentioned yesterday, went through a horrible, horrible flu season in 1957. There was, I believe, what was it, the Hong Kong flu in 68? All of those strains are still with us. In fact, when you take a look at all of the flu deaths worldwide every single year, it's every bit as many who died of corona. This is going to be with us in various forms, although I think it's going to be, they're going to be mitigated. The variants will be less lethal. But not at one, including H1N1 a few years ago, but not in 68, 57, 19, 18, did we ever lock down the economy. What we did are three fundamental things that we departed from in this particular agenda because they wanted to exploit this for political gain. They wanted to blame Trump. They wanted to punish the enemies with a lockdown, and they wanted to win the election. If you look at history, number one, they make public health recommendations. They don't make mandates. Number two, they protect the vulnerable. They don't infect them in nursing homes. And number three, they let everybody else, including young kids, go about their lives. We did the opposite this time. God may forgive these people that infected nursing homes, these governors, these liberal governors. God may forgive these people that tormented children for a year and ruined their last year in high school, their first grade. There is an epidemic of depression amongst adolescents today, directly result of these lockdowns. It was a form of child abuse. Let me be clear. I'll repeat it just in case you didn't hear me. It was a form of child abuse, and none of it was necessary. We were going to flatten the curve for 15, maybe 30 days so that hospital capacity, which was never in danger of running thin, wouldn't do so. Once that was done, this economy should have been opened a year ago, as I said on the campaign trail, as the president said, as Rush said. Instead, they have tormented, they have punished, they have violated every damn civil liberty that we've come to expect in the name of power. This is a scandal of untold proportion. History will not be kind to these Democrat governors, the Biden administration, and the news media who basically served as their enforcers. I'm Jason Lewis, guiding you through another edition of the Rush Limbaugh Program. Oh, and before we continue, let me remind you that you can start saving right now if you're refinancing your mortgage. Now, let me tell you something. Rush recommended this to us, American Financing. This is the company that puts your needs first. American Financing is a family-owned mortgage leader that customizes loans for both new home purchases and refinances. Depending upon your situation, you can save hundreds, if not thousands, a month. Rush has all the details here.
As a homeowner, one of the activities you don't want to miss out on is accessing lower interest mortgage rates. Because a lower rate can mean hundreds of dollars in monthly savings. That's tens of thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. So please, make today the day you call American Financing and get the refinance process started. Now, you'll work with a dedicated mortgage consultant, someone who's going to guide you through the custom loans, helping you pick the right option to achieve your goals without any pressure. No upfront or hidden fees either, because they only want what's best for you.
So start saving today on your mortgage by calling American Financing. Here's the phone number Rush always shared with you. 1-800-795-1210. That's 800-795-1210. Or visit AmericanFinancing.net. NMLS 182334. That's NMLS ConsumerAccess.org. Interesting developments abroad. Has Biden and Putin meet? The press is going gaga, but Putin is pushing back as good as he gets. Not from Biden, from the media. They've got to carry the water for Joe, you see. But it is fascinating. Every time, as I mentioned earlier, Putin gets pushed on, are you a killer, as Joe Biden says? Are you knocking off your political opponents? What about this assassination or this assassination? He pushes right back, and at a press conference, he had a really interesting answer to this notion that are you knocking off your political opponents?
On the question of who is murdering whom, people rioted and went into the Congress in the U.S. with political demands. and many people were declared as criminals, and they are threatened with imprisonment from 20 to 25 years. On what grounds, we don't know. One of the participants, we're just shot on the spot, and unarmed as well.
Now, this is fascinating because you have to take a look at this somewhat objectively, something impossible for today's Democrat media complex, and that is this. Imagine you had a January 6th, in Tiananmen Square. Or imagine you had it in Moscow. And you had a group of people, and no one's condoning breaking the law. I don't want to traumatize anybody. But just to say you've got a group of people that have been fed up with a government not being responsive to their needs, or half the country not being represented, at least that's how they feel. And so they go overboard. They demonstrate. They knock down a few doors. They don't have any weapons. They look kind of goofy in these funny hats. But that's what they do, and you don't have to justify breaking the law. I wouldn't do it. I served in Congress. I wouldn't want people rushing onto the floor. But I have to say, watching what I saw, I also wouldn't have been cowering under the desk. But the point is, had that happened in Moscow, and someone was shot by the, wouldn't have been the KGB, but the security forces in Moscow, and then people were charged and imprisoned without due process in Moscow, what do you think our response would be over what Putin did? This is not a defense of Putin. This is trying to get people to look objectively on another country or on another politician the way they look on ours. We've become so distorted by this anti-Trump hysteria that's infected the bloodstream of American politics that we can't see things for what they are. I'm telling you, the very people that are calling for the heads of every protester convicted of trespassing, where are the insurrection charges? Why is it that some people are being charged and others who are at that event on January 6th are not being charged? Why is it we can't get the videotapes? Who shot the woman that died? The Air Force veteran. If this were to happen in Beijing or Hong Kong, if it were to happen in Moscow, the same people calling for the heads of the January 6th insurrectionists would be absolutely defending them. And that's what Putin is saying. And I think it's just very, very interesting where he's coming from on this. We'll keep you up to date as to whether Joe Biden's got a comeback to this. He's the one that called him killer, so that ought to be interesting, but I wouldn't hold your breath. 1-800-282-2882. Let's squeeze in a call from Dartmouth, Massachusetts. George, you're up next. Hi.
Yeah, and you're making the point that I want to make as well, and that is, to me, the crisis is the media, because they continue with these narratives and playing up these false narratives, and now foreign leaders are using them, just like Putin is using here. It's exactly what happened. Woman comes in, goes through the window, and is killed. That's what they do to dissidents in other countries. And even a couple months ago when China was, some ambassadors were talking to the U.S. and the U.S. was complaining to China about human rights issues. And they turned the tables right back on the Americans and said, hey, aren't you the racist country? Aren't you the ones who can't get rid of racism? And you're going to tell us about human rights? And that's the media playing up these false narratives about us being racist, about what happened at the Capitol. And now it's fodder for these leaders, which is extremely dangerous.
You do not have to condone what happened at the Capitol on January 6th to realize any comparison to 9/11 is so fraught with hyperbole and bias and hand-wringing that it ought to be laughed right out of any newsroom. And yet that's what they're doing. That's like Merrick Garland yesterday saying the top domestic threat is not killer Putin. It's not President Xi in China. It's not, cyber attack. It's white supremacist groups in America. I don't know about your neighborhood, but they're roaming all over mine. I can't go anywhere. Are you kidding me? These people are so out of control, and you're quite right. It is the media. They ought to be seen for what they are. Just horrible hacks for state-run government, for state-run media, I should say, back after this on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. Okay, don't go anywhere. Third hour coming right up on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. I can hardly wait. I want to continue with this lockdown stuff and the media bias, all of that. Remember when Georgia and a number of other states, but Georgia in particular in this case, decided they wouldn't lock down completely. They'd have a hands-off policy. The Atlantic, one of the most scurrilous joke of an outfit. I mean, these people are just hacks. They're on their knees for big government at all times, wrote that Georgia was conducting an experiment in human sacrifice, except, as usual, they weren't just wrong, they lied. There was no difference between the lockdown states or the lockdown countries and the non-lockdown countries. We'll examine this and get to Rush's take on it coming right up next hour, so don't go anywhere. Hey, this is odd. I just got a direct message from Chrissy Teigen. I'm just wondering if I should answer it. What? I don't know. Is it a problem? Welcome back. Third hour of the program underway now with the talk show host formerly known as Congressman Jason Lewis. This woman is absolutely bonkers. Now, I didn't know who the hell she was, to be honest with you. Chrissy Teigen apparently likes to go after anybody that doesn't agree with her, usually conservatives, and destroy their lives on social media. Other than that, she's a force for good. I don't know what she does. She's married to what? Some singer, right? I wonder who wears the pants in that family. Man, oh, man. These liberals just think rules don't apply to them. Civility doesn't apply to them. It's like the screaming mobs at the Trump inauguration. I was actually at the Trump inauguration as an incoming new freshman member of Congress. And I will tell you, the throngs of juveniles, albeit they were 38, 48, 58, but they were nevertheless throngs of juveniles, screaming at the top of their lungs, bawling, crying, throwing temper tantrums in the street was unbelievable. You're just looking at these people going, holy mackerel, I guess we haven't won the war on drugs after all. These people were living proof that something was wrong with the culture. And now you get Chrissy Teigen, who's nothing more than a manifestation of them, just a spoiled brat of a person. And I don't know, what's it, John Legend? Is that right, guys? John Legend is who she's married to, right? Boy, if there ever was a case of poetic justice, it's the idea that that guy's got to go home to earth. Anyway, I want to move on, speaking of comedians, because now they're finally getting it. Imagine for a moment, Vladimir Putin had a lab and was fiddling around with, viruses. And at his lab, bats were hanging off the hats of the scientists working. And when they found out they engineered a supervirus and they unleashed it, or just incompetently it escaped the lab, they said, hey, what, bats? No bats here. And there's a picture that showed up that showed a bat hanging from the hat of a scientist. Can you imagine what the press would do? Can you imagine? They would be clamoring along with, you know, Mitt Romney, John McCain, Ben Sasse, Liz Cheney, all the war hawks. They would be clamoring for a nuclear strike. Well, okay, maybe not a nuclear strike, but some sort of strike against Russia. And yet, what could be described as an act of war, the China fiddling with this virus, the gain-of-function research that, yes, however indirectly, we funded, thank you, Dr. Fauci, that's not an issue. It's all Vladimir Putin. It's unbelievable. In fact, it's so over the top that you can't even convince these late-night comedians of reality anymore. Now, thanks to Jon Stewart, some folks are trying. I don't know, you've heard about this, right? Stewart was on Stephen Colbert. I don't think I've watched that show ever, so I can't tell you what it's like, other than Colbert is more a Democrat than he is a comedian, right? But Stewart, you got to give him credit, is seeing things for what they are. Of course, this was a Wuhan virus. Well, you don't have to take it from my mouth. Take it from Jon Stewart on Stephen Colbert.
There's a chance that this was created in a lab. There's an investigation.
A chance?
Right,
there's a novel respiratory coronavirus overtaking Wuhan, China. What do we do? Oh, you know who we could ask? the Wuhan novel respiratory coronavirus lab. The disease is the same name as the lab. That's just a little too weird, don't you think? And then they ask those scientists, they're like, so wait a minute, you work at the Wuhan respiratory coronavirus lab. How did this happen? And they're like, a pangolin kissed a turtle. And you're like, no, if you look at the name, let me see your business card. Show me your business card. Oh, I work at the coronavirus lab in Wuhan. Oh, because there's a coronavirus loose in Wuhan.
That could very well be, and Anthony Fauci and Francis Collins at NIH have said, like, it should definitely be investigated.
Don't stop with the logic and people and things. The name of the disease.
Wait a second.
The building. The only coronavirus we have is in Wuhan.
Yes.
Where they have a lab called. What's the lab called again, Stephen?
The Wuhan Novel Coronavirus Lab.
I believe that's the case.
And now, how long have you worked for Senator Ron Johnson?
Turns out Ron Johnson was right. He's been right all along. And Stephen Colbert just cannot stomach that, because his number one job is to get Democrats elected. Comedy comes second, as though if he, I don't know that he was ever that funny, but some people say so. But now he's just a hack. He's just an angry, juvenile, screaming at the Trump inauguration hack. And nobody saw this more. I grew up in the era of real late night comedians, and primarily Johnny Carson. Now, Carson was a liberal. Now, you could tell once in a while, but it was never overt, and he would make as many jokes about Jimmy Carter as he would about Reagan. Same was true of Saturday Night Live in its earlier incarnation. Same was true of Jay Leno. Now they've gone off the deep end, and they're not funny, they're just lecturing. And nobody saw this more clear than Rush did. In fact, he made a point about the worst of them all. Jimmy Kimmel is just a despicable little brat.
Here is David in Dallas. How you doing, David?
I'm doing good. Dittos, Rush.
Thank you.
I'd like to know, how is it possible for someone like Jimmy Kimmel, freaking Jimmy Kimmel, go from girls on trampolines to the moral voice on the left?
I'm going to get in deep doo-doo here. You have to understand something about these late night comedians. They have a staff of writers that may number from 10 to 20. So whatever Kimmel is uttering every night, when it comes to jokes, he may not even have written it. I mean, you just don't know. Now it ends up in his name, but there are, like, this show doesn't have any writers. Never have had, but Johnny Carson had writers. Letterman, 25 of them. I mean, they work all day putting together a 5 to 8 minute monologue. What you're really asking is, why do people grant him any credibility when he makes massive shifts like this?
Exactly. Why is he even considered as an authority? That's just beyond my understanding.
He's actually not, but the people who agree with what he's saying grant him that status because they want to hear it, and they don't really care who says it. The fact that Kimmel is saying it means they're going to bond with him and support him. But to people that don't agree with what Kimmel says, he's not an authority to anybody. He's a hack. Jimmy Kimmel has demonstrated by virtue of his career that when it comes to political thinking, he doesn't really have any original thought.
And exactly, yeah.
So his bleating on health care and now Trump, believe me, it has been established that he has a lot of assistance from the staff of Senator Schumer. They send him talking points and other political things to say about Trump and about health care, and he just repeats it.
Is it just money? He just wants money?
What do you mean, is it just money? He just wants money? No.
I just want to get paid.
Okay, you're asking so many different things here that I'm not criticizing you, but you're asking a lot of different questions. You're asking about how can he do this with credibility. You're asking, why is he doing it? Why did he go from trying to be a comedian telling jokes to trying to be taken seriously as a political commentator? I mean, every one of your questions has a different answer.
I guess my real question is, I understood Jimmy Kimmel to be a Republican, a man's man, 15 years ago. How can
because of the man show?
Man,
are you
because
yeah,
of
his
show.
Because of the Man Show? You thought he was a Republican?
Because of the Man Show.
He was on with Adam Carolla, who is a conservative.
Right. I had no clue that he was a liberal whatsoever.
Well, it happened. And, you know, there's this thing called, and I'm not being facetious, there is this very well-tested theorem. It's called O'Sullivan's Law. And it is this. Any person or group which is not actively conservative every day will become liberal. Meaning liberalism is the natural default position for unthinking people, for emotional people. It's the default. Conservatism, on the other hand, is, I don't want to be misunderstood here, but it's a mental, it's an intellectual pursuit. You may live your life as a conservative and you may vote as a conservative, but you may not be able to explain why. Liberals don't have to explain why. All they have to do is say they care or notice suffering or discrimination, victims or what have you, and they're automatically feted with great compliments for courage and sensitivity. But nothing they ever propose fixes anything. All they do is further mess things up. So Kimmel, going from the Man Show to where he is now, it could be as seductive as one thing. Okay, so his kid ends up, medical condition, goes to the hospital, discovers some things there, and decides to come out and tell the story. And the Schumer office heard it and got in touch with him. And now Kimmel can be taken seriously for once instead of just being a jokester. And believe me, actors and comedians crave to be taken seriously.
And that's why they call it the Limbaugh Institute for Advanced Conservative Studies. I will give you a little additional thought, and that was, in addition to O'Sullivan's Law, that liberalism is the default position. It's a little bit like groupthink, conformity. What's so ironic about this is, you know, the arts, the creative class, was supposed to be nonconformists. They are the biggest conformists under the sun. Which way is the wind blowing? What does everybody say? That's where I'm going. Another word for that is cowardice. That's why you don't have very many leaders in the world. But Jefferson himself pinpointed it so many years ago when he said, the natural inclination of things is for liberty to yield, and government to grow. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what TJ said, and he was right. Back with more of the fastest 3 hours in radio when we return. Let's squeeze in a call or two this segment before we carry on here on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. The contact line, 1-800-282-2882. Let's go to Wisconsin. And Jack, you're on with the Jason Lewis, your guide host today.
Hey, Jason. Great to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
It's your daily show. Always felt a little bit smarter having listened to you every day. You kind of stepped on my point earlier, but I wanted to add to it and then bring it home with something Rush said. And you know, the point is that, you know, you talked about Carter yesterday, and I lived through Carter too. And the difference between Carter and Biden is Carter was incompetent. I think Biden's not doing this. His minions are doing the people he surrounded himself with are doing this. You know, he's not asleep at the wheel. He's not even in the car.
And I love the. Right. I love the pretense in the media about Democrats have their own internecine warfare going on between moderates and the squad. Hogwash. The Democrat Party is the squad. The squad is the Democrat Party.
Absolutely. I think they're collapsing this on purpose, that the managed decline running on its own isn't running fast enough with them, for them. And to bring it back to something Rush said and that you said about the bureaucracy and, you know, crashing the economy and doing all these awful things was did Hitler need to tell Reinhard Heydrich or Mengele to do what they did? He didn't need to order that. He didn't have to have his fingerprints on it. The permanent bureaucracy is hired to do what they do.
Well, I wouldn't make comparisons to Hitler, but I will say that the permanent bureaucracy now includes corporate America, the nonprofit community, education, big tech, woke business. It's what I call institutional liberalism, and we are surrounded by it. And you're right. It is run on autopilot right now. And this is the biggest difference, and this is what I was trying to get across yesterday as well, between Biden and Carter. I think the similarities are astounding. The Fed just announced an hour ago they would keep the federal funds rate the same. The market, however, looked at their statement, said, oh, someday they're going to raise rates, and they tanked 300 points. So by letting this monetary expansion get out of control, they now have backed themselves into a corner where they can't wring inflation out of the economy without the bond and stock market panicking and dropping and the bubble burst. So we're in a bad way, which is very similar to Jimmy Carter. But the difference between now and 50 years ago is most of America 50 years ago still believed in America. They believed in the rule of law. They believed in the constitutional republic. They believed in equal protection under the law. They believed in private property. They believed that the American dream was real. My concern today, to your point, is I know the Democrat Party doesn't believe it anymore, but is that half the country? So the reason Reagan came along is people saw what Carter was doing with stagflation and many of the problems, energy dependence, that we're going through today, and they rejected it. They revolted and elected Reagan. When we see it today, half the country, the institutions, applaud it. Well, we like this. Socialism's good. Open borders, we like them wide open. And if that's the case, we've lost the country. I mean, that really is the $64,000 question, is it not? We've gone through these things before, and we revolted and got the country back on track. What happens if half the country thinks they like socialism, they like chaos in the streets? They like violence in Buckhead and violence in North Minneapolis and violence in Seattle and Portland. Portland's a basket case. Portland's an absolute basket case. That's why Eastern Oregon wants to secede. L.A., crime's going through the roof. San Diego used to be a conservative paradise. I mean, everything that we once prided ourselves upon is now lost. And you have to wonder whether or not, I don't want to paint too bleak a picture, but what I am saying is the time is now. If you don't take the country back from this, and I think you're right, I do think you're right that this is an orchestrated attempt at chaos. Again, let me reiterate, we have people being shot for their skin color in places like Georgia. Buckhead is closing malls due to violence. Minneapolis has protests every night. Seattle, Portland, you name it. And what does Merrick Garland, the attorney general, say? The problem is white people. The problem is white supremacy. I don't know if that's the problem that caused the record amount of damage that we saw last summer. If you take a look at the Bureau of Justice statistics and where the crime's coming from, I don't think that supports what Garland said. But look, we have commandeered the institutions of society to go after one political viewpoint, and that's conservatism, more specifically Trump. Mark in Minnesota, you're up next on the Rush Limbaugh program. Hi.
Hello.
Hello, Mark.
Is this Jason?
Sure is.
Hey, Jason, I have a question for you. When we get our elected officials talking to us on TV, they're not held to the truth. But yet, when they go vote in private, when they're under oath, then all of a sudden they tend to say different things. Why aren't these guys held to the truth when they're speaking to the public?
You mean when during the Russian collusion hoax? When you had members of Congress were saying this, and Rush was Trump was a Russian spy, and then when you actually had the testimony of Mueller and Comey et al., well, did you see direct evidence of? Well, no, we really didn't see direct evidence.
Exactly. So why are they allowed to lie to the public and sway public opinion?
Because we do not have a fourth estate that cares about accuracy and holding people accountable. We have a media cabal that cares about doing the government's bidding. I mean, I know it's tiresome complaining about the media all the time, but it really is the crux of the problem. If you don't have the free flow of information, why do you think every single dictator, from Mao, from Stalin, from Hitler, from Castro, from Ortega, pick your favorite dictator, Pinochet, doesn't matter. What's the first thing they do? Shut down a free press. Why? They don't want competition from the press for their aims. What's happening today? Publishers are canceling Josh Hawley's book. Facebook and YouTube. Ron Johnson said hydroxychloroquine may actually work. He was kicked off of YouTube. The censorship is palpable, and the media ought to be fighting that. Instead, journalists are encouraging it. It is a total betrayal of their profession and, frankly, the country. And we are back, ready to get Rush's take on, on the big tech monopolies in a second. You know, in Ohio, by the way, there is a lawsuit that's trying to make Google a public utility. They're suggesting it's a public utility. We talked about this earlier. Now, forget about your view on antitrust for a moment. If you compare the market share of a Google or YouTube, one and the same, if you compare Facebook, if you compare Amazon, if you, any of the big tech companies that fared so well during the lockdown, their market share would put ExxonMobil or the Rockefellers to shame. So if you believe in natural monopolies and antitrust law, the fact that we don't apply it there is a massive exception to the rule. And the reason is because they are doing the government's bidding. They are big tech liberals. They're not companies. And just think about it. Even if you say, well, I don't, you know, I'm a libertarian. I don't like natural monopolies. There's no such thing. Well, then how would you feel if a public utility decided we're not going to provide service during the next rolling blackout to Republicans? Hey, if you don't like it, don't take our business. Or don't sign up with us. They can't do that. They are a common carrier. Goes back 100 years, and a common carrier is someone that cannot deny service to people based on the need of their product, their market share, and all the rest. Now, again, there are some libertarians that don't believe in that. They say in a perfect world without barriers to entry, there would be no monopolies. But we don't have that now, and primarily because the government grants these outfits favors, Section 230, but also because they're global monopolists. And when you have globalism, you have a whole new problem with this. You can't sacrifice national sovereignty on the back of global trade. We have to have America first, American sovereignty, just like we have to have a defense department. Defense money could be better spent elsewhere, but we've got to have a defense. So we reallocate resources. You can't eat tanks, right? In a perfect world, you'd be growing more food with that money. More innovation elsewhere. But it's worth it because we got to preserve America, the last best hope for our country. Same is true in this case. And yet, these outfits are allowed to censor people based on their political affiliation. You wouldn't let XL Energy, you wouldn't let Con Edison, you wouldn't let any utility under the sun say, oh, we're not going to serve political conservatives. We're just going to ban them from our service. Yet when Ron Johnson said we ought to be researching early treatments for COVID-19. When he said hydroxychloroquine actually might work in many cases, YouTube didn't like it and they censored him. You don't think that's a problem? Of course it's a problem. And James O'Keefe, Project Veritas and all the rest, had talked to a Google executive in regard to their desire to influence the 2016 election. And this is worth hearing again. Roll audio 12.
Yesterday after the program, I spoke with James O'Keefe of Project Veritas. This is a bombshell what he discovered. A year and a half in the making, admitted evidence from a high-ranking Google employee that they are colluding with Democrats to shape the outcome of the 2020 election. She admits it. That they're not going to have another Trump situation like we had in 2016. Here's real collusion. This is real obstruction. This is Google. They're going to do this with their search algorithms and any number of other things to diminish conservative presence, conservative search answers that are positive in nature. And by the same token, they're going to promote as much as they can Democrat issues and the eventual Democrat nominee. And so he releases the video a couple days ago, and the person he caught in the secret video is, well, no. I was just a conversation. It doesn't mean anything. And then she pulled down her accounts, and they also own YouTube, so they pulled the video. They pulled the O'Keefe video off of YouTube when it was in the process of skyrocketing to 1 million views. They pulled it down after 50,000. Pure unadulterated censorship. The whistleblowers at Google don't trust the drive-by media. They called O'Keefe at Project Veritas, which is fine with him, but he's sitting there thinking after this expose that the drive-bys have to pick it up. And I kind of told him yesterday that's never going to happen. The drive-bys are not media. They are now advocates and activists for the left. There's no difference in them and Google. So his tweet, the greatest indictment of U.S. journalism in a generation, tech sources distrusted the drive-by media, came to me, Project Veritas. Google responded twice, Congress holding hearings, YouTube parent company, Google, took down our report as it was lighting up the internet, and there's not a single American mainstream media journalist who has been assigned to the story. Of course not. This is very, very serious thing that's happening. Facebook and Google, throw Twitter in there too, they are systematically colluding with Democrats to affect the outcome of the 2020 election. And O'Keefe got a Google executive to admit it. Her name is Jen Janai. She then had all of her accounts deleted. Jen Janai did. And then the video of her that O'Keefe and his people posted on YouTube, which is owned by Google, was pulled down. They were racing. I mean, they had people signing up and clicking to watch that video in droves. And after they had reached 50,000 views, Google/YouTube pulled the video. They were exposed.
You know, think about this for a second. Think about all, and this is why this is dangerous, my friends. The reason it's dangerous is because they end up, this is always why censorship is dangerous, not because they censor something that happens to be untrue, it's they inevitably censor something that's true. So think about the Twitter feeds on the Russian collusion story, the false Trump Tower meeting, the Covington High School kids, all of the things these companies have been sued over and had to settle with were promoted by big tech. But what was censored by big tech? The Wuhan lab leak. Hydroxychloroquine actually working. Early treatments. We don't know the final story on January 6th. And this is why you can't countenance this from global monopolies. I want to repeat that. Global monopolies. If these companies are getting their revenue from, let's just pick a country, communist China. What interest do they serve? And they're allowed to censor? It can't be allowed. And I don't care how libertarian you are. Global commerce stops at the water's edge when it comes to national sovereignty, because without America, freedom ends. And you'll get the corporate state. And that's where we are right now with this. And I don't understand why the Republicans have so dropped the ball on this. Other than Johnson or Josh Hawley and a few others, why aren't they zeroed in on this like a laser? Why in the National Defense Authorization Act did they let Section 230 reform slip by? What the hell are you doing, Mitch? This is the existential threat for the freedom of ideas and limited government. And yet Republicans aren't focused on this. Not at all. They got to be pushed into this. This is the great debate in the GOP, by the way. This sort of national security, Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, Ben Sasse, Mitt Romney obsession especially over Russia, just like Democrats, versus turning big tech and the national security apparatus and the DOJ on Americans. Time to choose sides here, folks. It really is. And you better be choosing sides on your investments. You know, if you don't, you don't need to read the online financial pages to know that Jimmy Carter-style inflation and stagflation is back. You see it in the supermarket, at the lumber yard, at the gas pump. The value of our dollar is diminishing. It's the time when investors, however, the smart ones, buy precious metals, gold. It's how you protect your savings account and your IRA. Who do you call to buy real gold and silver? The kind you can hold in your hands and put in your IRA. Both are possible at Oxford Gold Group. Welcomed right here on the EIB network. Oxford Gold Group has passed all of the tests on customer service, attention to detail, and dealing honestly with you. They do all of those things correctly. Just call them today at 833-404-GOLD and see for yourself. They will answer all your questions, send you out their free investment guide. Protecting your retirement accounts with real gold or holding gold in your hand is easier than you think. The Oxford Gold Group will do all the work. Call them today, Oxford Gold Group at 833-404-GOLD today. Protect what you've earned with real gold and silver from the Oxford Gold Group. Call them today at 833-404-GOLD. That's 833-404-GOLD. And what an honor it is to guide you through the fastest 3 hours in radio. I am the talk show host, formerly known as Congressman Jason Lewis, on the Rush Limbaugh program, as Rush remains in our hearts and memories and will stay there for the, well, for the foreseeable future. What an impact the great L. Rush Bow had. 1-800-282-2882. Let's squeeze in a call or two before we get to our EIB high note of the day in Johnson City, Texas. Here's Ken.
Hi, I just wanted to comment. You made a comment a little bit ago about Standard Oil and Facebook being comparable from an antitrust standpoint. But there's a big difference. Standard Oil was a necessary commodity, and John D. Rockefeller was putting all other competition out of business. Facebook and Twitter and Amazon are not at all necessary. In fact, when they started censoring, I stopped using all three of them, sold my stock in all three of them. And I won't do business with them because I won't support censorship. I would guess that 70% of your listeners still use those companies. So 70% of your listeners are supporting censorship in this country.
So let's say, let's just say you're developing an app or you're trying to sell a book. And in comes, Amazon that says, if you're going to sell your book here, we're going to promote our own publisher first. Or if you're going to put your app on Google or Apple, well, we're going to make certain that our own similar app that we developed from getting the data on your app is going to go up first. That isn't key to your success as a businessman or woman?
That is key to your success. But again, that's censorship on their part. And if you continue to do business with Amazon, you support them. You can shop at Walmart. Pretty soon, Amazon will get
Well, they put them out of business. The mom-and-pop stores are closing quicker than you can say antitrust.
Listen, the mom-and-pop stores, everybody used to blame Walmart for closing mom-and-pop stores. It wasn't right. Walmart that closed them. It was the consumers that closed them, the consumers that wanted a cheaper price. Walmart's price. They were providing a necessary service.
I want to get this straight here. So you were in favor of breaking up Standard Oil, which, by the way, ended up dividing into other parts that became just as monopolistic. It didn't work. But you were in favor of that because you deemed it a necessary product, but you're not in favor of applying the same antitrust law to companies that have a much bigger market share today?
Don't forget what antitrust is supposed to do. It's supposed to protect us. We don't need Facebook. The point you're missing is Facebook is not a necessary service. Neither is Twitter. Neither is Amazon.
Well, we had whale oil before crude. We had whale oil. What do we need that for? You can make that argument about anything. I think you can honestly make the argument, Ken, if you want, that you shouldn't apply antitrust law at all. That's sort of the libertarian argument. But then you've got a problem with utilities. Should utilities be able to operate without common carrier regulation? Should a utility be able in Johnson City say, you know what, we're not going to provide service to Republicans? Because that's what Google is basically saying on YouTube.
Application of those laws that has something to do with it. In Johnson City, there is only one utility. So your argument here wouldn't apply.
And there's only one Google and one Facebook and one Twitter. They control the platforms.
But we don't need Facebook. It isn't a necessary. Neither is Google. Neither is Twitter.
First of all, to disseminate information is absolutely crucial. That is how. You mean the Russian meddling was a hoax when they were controlling Facebook ads? That is in the eye of the beholder, and I think that's where you're wrong. That it's just not going to work that way. We got to take a break. We'll do it now so we can come back with the EIB high note of the day. Stick around. You're on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. Okay, I wanted to make certain we had some time for the EIB high note of the day. Second day in a row, we've been talking about dogs. Well, dogs are amazing. And this is a Labrador named Marley. Saved his owner's life. Are you ready for this? Getting between him and a deadly rattlesnake. 18-year-old Alex Laredo just stepped outside his home in San Diego when he heard the telltale rattle, right? Sensing danger, Marley leapt into action to protect him.
Before I could even, turn, Marley had, already ran in between us, basically pushes me out of the way. He barks a few times at the snake. The snake lunges at him and bites him right on his tongue. It lunges again and it bit him on his lip. Marley's a hero. He's my best friend. I don't know what I would do without him. If it wasn't for Marley, I would have gotten bitten, and it probably would have been really bad.
That's an amazing story. I mean, Marley spent a couple of days at the animal hospital. It was a close call, but he pulled through. Laredo got Marley when he was just 11 years old to help him around the house and boost his confidence. Dogs are amazing at that. And Marley helped him achieve all of his dreams, really. And now he can add saving his life to the list. You know, I grew up with cats and dogs in our family. We had cats, collies, and shepherds, and then we had cats hanging around, and the dogs and the cats actually got along pretty well. But what they bring to a family and what they bring to you as an individual is absolutely remarkable. And I know what a great way to end this program and remember how much Rush loved these little critters as well. So it's been a pleasure. We'll see you down the road.